Thanks for tuning in to Parenting 101, the Cliff Notes. Today I will be reviewing the book The Yes Brain by Dan Siegel and Tina Payne Bryson. This book shares the four fundamentals of the Yes Brain, which are balance, resilience, insight, and empathy. The authors share that by implementing and modeling these skills with our children, we can develop a Yes Brain. But what exactly is a Yes Brain? A yes brain can be seen in how we respond to stressful or challenging situations. So someone with a yes brain presents as flexible, curious, resilient, they are willing to try new things and even make mistakes. It is someone who is open to the world and relationships, and someone who relates to others and understands themselves. So those with a yes brain can view challenges as simply challenges to be overcome instead of paralyzing impediments. And when we're working from our yes brain, we are working with receptivity instead of reactivity, which is found in the no brain. So those with a no brain are reactive. They are fearful, they're rigid, and they shut down, often worrying that they might make a mistake. These people tend to focus on external achievement rather than internal effort and exploration. Those with a no brain find it hard to calm themselves when stressed, and may stay in a state of stress longer than those with a yes brain. The authors talk about the brain throughout this book and reference that when we function from a no brain, we are primarily working from the brainstem, aka the lizard brain. So to explain the lizard brain, if you think about an animal such as a lizard and you compare it to, say, your pet dog, these two animals clearly have different functions. The dog can be warm and cozy, and it's almost like dogs have feelings, right? Whereas a lizard, it's just eating, it's breathing, it's, you know, adjusting its body temperature. And that's because the brain in a lizard is less developed than that of a mammal brain. So a lizard has primarily just a brain stem, and in the brain stem is where our basic survival behaviors happen. It's when we develop prefrontal cortex and other parts of the brain, that's when we have feelings and emotions and ability to problem solve. So that's just a little bit of a difference if you're looking at it from an animal perspective. But when we're talking about the brain stem, we often call it the lizard brain. And this is the part of the brain which is responsible for initiating the fight, flight, or freeze response. So often when we're stuck in a no brain, behaviors are being made in a primitive mode. Whereas when we have a yes brain, we're able to connect our social engagement system, which helps us connect with others, and we feel more capable of addressing challenges in a strong, clear, and flexible way. So, the first fundamental of a yes brain that the authors discuss is balance. So balance has a lot to do with emotional regulation. So we have three zones. The green zone, which is the ideal zone where kids can feel calm and in control of their bodies and decisions. When kids are upset, they may leave the green zone and enter the revved up, chaotic meltdown mode, which is the red zone, or do the opposite, which is shut down and withdraw into the blue zone. So it's actually normal and healthy for kids to leave the green zone. We want them to experience slight levels of challenge and discomfort, and the feelings and abilities at succeeding at those challenges. What we don't want is our kids to be in the red or blue zone for long periods of time. If they are in these zones for long periods of time, they're not learning how to regulate their emotions and are actually becoming more distressed, which is sending more stress chemicals throughout their brain, which impedes in their development. So as parents, it's your job to help them through these challenging moments. The authors call it finding the integration sweet spot. What this means is that you don't take on the child's emotions as your own, but you don't dismiss them either. Also, we don't want to jump in and save our kids from distress too easily, but we also don't want them to sincerely struggle as well. So here's a quick example. Little Emma is eating her goldfish crackers and the tail breaks off. Emma starts crying and freaking out. What we don't want to do is fall into despair with her like this. Oh my goodness, this is the worst day ever. The world is over. Oh my God. Or the alternatives, hey Emma, it's not a big deal, get over it. Or, oh no, let me get the goldfish glue and stick it back on. So instead, we should acknowledge the feeling behind the meltdown with a statement like, I know, love, you're really mad, aren't you, about the goldfish breaking? Man, I know you're disappointed right now. So this is what we call name it to tame it, and this is a technique that we'll learn about later. So not only do we want to walk with our kids through the zones of regulation to help them remain, exit, and return to the green zone, but we also want to provide balance with sleep. Sleep is brain hygiene. Without enough of it, the body and brain is compromised in so many ways. Without the recommended amount of sleep, a child's green zone shrinks and their window of tolerance narrows, leaving them more vulnerable to becoming more and more emotionally volatile and less able to regulate themselves and even problem solve. So this is something we're all familiar with. We see it in our toddlers when they need a nap based on their behavior. That's a window of tolerance and green zone shrinking for our very eyes. So when we're having meltdowns over absolutely nothing, we can see that their window of tolerance is shrinking. And usually, if they get a nap, they're okay, right? They can handle that stress a little bit better when they're not so tired. Another aspect of balance is a balanced schedule. We want to make sure that kids and adults too have enough time doing these following things: sleep time, physical time, focus time, time in, downtime, connecting time, and play time. All these activities make up a full set of mental nutrients that your brain and relationships need to function at their best. Next up is resilience. Resilience is a state of resourcefulness that allows us to move through challenges with strength and clarity. So balance helps with the short-term goal of getting back into the green zone, whereas resilience works on the long-term goal of expanding the green zone. Both of these goals lead to the ability to bounce back from adversity and challenge. So this is where the techniques come in of name it to tame it. So name it to tame it helps to build resilience. We want to remember that behavior is communication. So instead of focusing on extinguishing the problematic behavior, we want to listen to the message that kids are showing us, then build skills on that. So here's an example. You're doing homework with Billy, and suddenly he throws his book and pencil across the table. To build resilience, we want to respond by first identifying the emotion behind the behavior. Oh, Billy, you threw your book and your pencil across the table. You must be really frustrated or upset with your homework. Doing this, we are naming the emotion for the child. We then want to help Billy calm down. So instead of talking, this is where we can sit with them, take deep breaths together, rub their back, or simply take a 5-minute break from the homework. Once the child is calm, we can give them a teachable but moment. Billy, I know you got really frustrated with this homework. It must be really hard for you today. And that's when you threw your book, right? But next time you're feeling frustrated, what's something different we could try? How about squeezing your hands and feet so tight, balling them up into fists? Or crumpling up that blank piece of paper over there. Yeah, I don't need that paper. You can crumple that up. I'll say, Mommy, I'm getting really frustrated with this homework. So now we know that this may take a couple of times for Billy to implement these skills, but with your consistent and calm response, the brain will file this experience so that the next time this stress feeling arises, Billy's brain is able to pull the past experience and feeling and pair it with the appropriate coping skill that you taught him. So, as parents, we also have to be detectives. We want to be looking for the underlying feeling behind the behavior because remember, behavior is a child's way of communicating. So, to build resilience, we also have to provide some pushing or some cushion for our kids. This is where we have to walk the thin line of determining, okay, is this activity in the realm of their success or is it not? We want to decide if we're going to encourage our kids to try activities, even though they may be unsure, but we know that they can do it and that we're there to support and encourage them. Or if we do see that they are in a situation which they truly cannot handle by themselves and have become distressed, we want to provide the cushion, which is providing the hands-on support and perhaps an easier option for them. But remember, it's okay to have some cushion. This doesn't mean that your kid's a failure. It simply means that they need a little extra support and time to expand their green zone. So don't forget, we actually do more harm than good if we do too much pushing and not enough cushion. When we do that, we can cause too much dysregulation, which makes the child more fearful and dependent, which is the opposite of what we want to accomplish. Another resilience strategy is teaching your child mindset skills. So this shows kids how to shift their perspective so they're not victim to their emotions and circumstances. Mindset is using techniques such as breathing awareness and body scans to basically teach the child the name it to tame it technique to reflect and identify their own feelings. We teach the child to be aware of their physical body or how their physical body is responding and how they can change that physical response as well as their feelings. So, mindset skills leads us nicely into our third concept, which is insight. So, insight is the ability to look within and understand ourselves, and then use what we have learned to make a good decision and be more in control of our lives. The authors explain this as being the observer and the observed. Be the spectator observing the player on the field, not the player in the game. So, insight is the ability to be aware of your environment and everything that's playing into a situation, as well as your own emotions in that moment, then pausing. During this pause, we were able to reflect and decide how we want to respond to a situation. Once we have more insight on a situation, we're able to respond better. We use this a lot as parents, but it's also a great skill for kids to learn as well. Another insight strategy is reframe the pain. Ask kids, what struggle do you prefer? Sounds like a silly question, right? But here's an example from the book, which is a really good way of helping you to understand it. So imagine, for example, that your 10-year-old loves playing goalie for her hockey team, but she hates the idea of putting in extra practice outside of her normal team activities. When you realize that this is the issue for her, you might be tempted to lecture about nothing worthwhile is easy, or how hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. But what if instead you simply helped her get more clear on her situation so she could make a more informed, insightful decision? The conversation might go something like this. Crystal always gets to play goalie and I never do. That's disappointing, isn't it? Yeah, I know she's good and all, but that's just because coach works with her after practice. Well, would you like to stay after practice some and work with your coach too? She's offered before. But practice is already an hour and a half. That's a long time to be on skates. I get it, I get it. So maybe think about it this way. You know how we've talked about sacrifice. I know, Dad, I have to sacrifice if I want to be good. You've told me 1,000 times. No. That's not what I was going to say. I was just going to tell you that you're going to sacrifice either way. The good news is, you get to choose your sacrifice. Huh? Well, it'll be a sacrifice to stay and practice your backward skating and defense skills after practice. But it's also a sacrifice if you decide not to put in the extra time. Because then you're sacrificing the possibility that you'd improve to get to play in more goals, often during the games. I guess. Really, think about it. I know both the options have drawbacks, but in a way, it's kind of great because you get to choose what you'd rather live with. You can choose to fa sacrifice by putting in the extra work and maybe get to play goalie more, or you can choose to get off the ice sooner. Meaning you'd rather live with less time to go. It's totally our call. So, do you see how the father reframed the issue for his daughter? He helped her step outside of her situation and view it from the position of a spectator, where she could view her options more fully. And he did so without rescuing her from making a decision or removing the discomfort involved. He helped her to recognize her own agency and see that she didn't have to feel like a victim without any say in the matter. So, insight strategy number two is avoid the red volcano eruption. So, we want to teach kids to pause before erupting. We can do this by teaching them about a volcano, how volcanoes boil up and boil up and boil up until it can't boil anymore and then it explodes. So this is like our feelings. One little annoying thing piles on top of another, on top of being hungry, until one small thing makes us explode. But when we teach kids about their red volcano, we are teaching them to notice the physical feelings they get in their body and to stop and calm down before getting to the point of explosion. Again, it's okay to have feelings and to be mad, but we want to teach kids to recognize their feelings and when they're starting to become angry so that they can take control of them before the emotions take control of them and they are uncontrollable. The final concept of developing a yes brain is empathy. Empathy is the perspective that allows us to keep in mind that each of us is not only a me, but we're part of an interconnected we as well. It's about understanding the perspective of another, as well as caring enough to take action on making things better. Like the other skills, empathy can be learned through daily experiences and interactions. One way we can do this is through fine-tuning the empathy radar. An active empathy radar helps children notice and attune to other people's minds so they can pick up signals, both verbal and non-verbal. It might mean simply being more aware of times when they're dominating a conversation, or finding ways to be more polite and get along even when they're in a bad mood. Or it might mean recognizing when someone else is in a bad mood and then deciding to be more sensitive with that person. Role playing is a really great technique to help build this skill. Another way to build empathy is to provide kids with a vocabulary so that they can communicate that they care for others. Sometimes this means introducing them to the basics of effective emotional communication, such as listening well before even offering advice when someone is hurt. And it might be teaching them techniques such as I statements, where we focus on how I feel rather than what you did to me. Also teaching them that when they're apologizing, they want to acknowledge how their actions made the other person feel. We also want to teach them that empathy is rarely about giving advice or finding a silver lining, but it's more about listening, being present, and sharing in feelings. We want to teach them phrases such as, "That must really hurt," and "I don't know what to say, but I'm really sorry that this happened." Thirdly, we want to expand their circle of concern. We want to increase their awareness of people outside their most intimate connections. This can be done through volunteering, a community service, discussing the feelings of people struggling elsewhere in the world that you might hear about perhaps in the news or in a movie. You can also expand your child's circle of concern by having them buy a gift for someone and having them pick a gift that that person would actually want and that they would actually like. So by implementing and teaching empathy, insight, resilience, and balance through your everyday activities, you're developing a yes brain in your child. You're helping them to be able to handle stress and challenge with flexibility, curiosity, and resiliency. But don't forget, the human brain doesn't fully develop until you're in your mid-20s. So this is going to take some time and some repetition, but just know that you're doing some amazing brain work and making connections that will last a lifetime. So thanks for listening. Please feel free to comment on my Facebook page, which is Parenting 101 The Cliff Notes, as well as give me some book suggestions for what we could read next time. Alrighty. I will see you next time. Thanks for listening.